Welcome to In Season, where we explore the farms, gardens, and wild spaces of the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff, and joining me in the studio today is gardener Jessica Schleif. Welcome, Jessica.
Hi, Teresa.
It's so great to have you here. And we were having a great conversation just before the show started, just kind of about spring and this season and all the exciting plants that are starting to bloom and leaf out. And what's going on in your world? What do you think about this time of year? We're having a kind of an interesting spring.
It is an interesting spring. Some of these days make you feel like you could do anything on those sunny days. And then on mornings like this, where there's frost on the ground and the roofs, it brings you a little bit back to the reality.
I know. I think it's just so hard this time of year because, especially if you're new to gardening, you're looking for guarantees and absolutes. And it's like, is it okay for me to put this plant out? Is it okay for me to start these seeds? Is it okay to do this or to do that? And I always feel like I'm saying, well, maybe, or it depends, or, well, it kind of, let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
And you could try it, but it might be terrible, you know?
Bring that back in tonight.
I know. Start those seeds, but you might have to start them again in 2 weeks because they're going to rot because it's gotten too wet, you know? And it just, it's over time, I think you come to understand and you can read those signals. But do you find that that's happened in your time here in this growing region? Like now you have a sense of things?
You know, this time of year, really what I'm doing right now in my home garden and other gardens that I help care for is I'm checking in.
Yeah.
I'm going through and I'm taking out weeds that I've left almost as a cover crop.
Yeah.
At a certain point during the winter when we're having the rains, I say to myself, well, these pop weeds aren't weeds right now. They're a cover crop. So there's areas that I'm going back into and taking out weeds before they're seeding, which helps me kind of check in with things that I've forgotten I've put in, or to see who's coming up, see those trilliums.
Yeah, little other bulbs emerging.
See other little bulbs emerging, the wood anemones. I mean, just some really sparkly people right now, the bleeding hearts. And then there's many things that I leave up through the winter to create habitat or food for the wildlife. The ornamental grasses, many of my perennials like the Rudbeckia seed pods or even artichoke seed heads.
So you leave those,
I leave those
the dead stems with the flowers still attached.
And I leave that up for structure, for something to look at. I find so much interest in beauty looking out on those frozen or wet mornings and seeing dead, decaying things, either going to seed or getting to watch the birds and people coming to those during the winter and using them for habitat or food. So now's my time of year where I go through and I really take those things down.
So you're cutting back the dead stems.
Exactly. Getting ready now for the new growth to come. So this is actually the time where I take down all the ornamental grasses, and that's something that I really love to use in the gardens for movement and height and deer-proofness.
Yes.
Is that a word?
Deer-proofness.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It sounds
that's
good.
That's a word in Astoria.
I think that's a concept that's generally understood and aspired to, deer-proofness. For sure. So I tend to look for, like, when I see the new growth of the plant starting to emerge, for me, that's that trigger to cut the old dead stuff off. Because I feel like it's, well, and cutting back plants is like a trigger to stimulate growth. I mean, it often encourages them to start leafing out more. So once they think it's warm enough to start leafing out, I'm like, okay, it's probably.
Yeah,
probably.
And you can kind of see the new plant emerging and then be able to take the stems down to maybe not to the ground, but to be able to see some of that new foliage on some of the thing like the Verbena bonirensis.
Uh-huh.
I see whole new little plants, and then I have a 3-foot stalk that I'm bringing down to that new little plant instead of just cutting it to the ground.
Yeah.
Kind of intelligently looking at the plant and seeing. Same thing with the ornamental grasses. I'll see people just take them straight flush to the ground. That promotes a die-off in the center. If you can really look at where the plant's coming from and take it there, you know, maybe a foot above the ground for some of the larger grasses.
And then as the new growth comes up, it'll obscure that dead.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's funny how we've become so adverse to leaving dead things in the garden. And I feel like there's so much benefit to allowing some of that stuff to retain, the plants to retain that growth. So
I think that is a thing that I think about so often in the general landscaping world. Uh-huh. There's a winter cleanup and everybody wants every little speck of organic debris gone and hauled away to the dump or something. I often want to keep that organic debris in between my plants. Even when I'm cutting things down now, I'm using those, I'm using a chop and drop method where I'm taking those grass clippings, some of the Haganochloa, the Japanese forest grass, those I'm just pulling away and they're just giving me their dead, beautiful little leaves. And I use those to mulch in pathways or around areas where the plants are going to grow in and I'm not going to have to see it. But there it is. It's decaying. It's providing organic material. It's providing a
shelter, too.
Shelter.
Absolutely. I was reading last fall and this really changed my whole, really changed my thoughts about cleanup. Where they're talking about all the different insects, especially bees, that overwinter, the pollinators that like under piles of leaves or under piles of fallen debris, and then if you rake all that up and clean it, you're killing their winter habitat.
I think when we start thinking about the pollinators, it gives us a totally different sense of beauty.
Yeah.
Suddenly, those little debris piles or the area at the back of the garden that you're not touching, there's meaning there.
Absolutely.
These ground bees are popping out of there.
It's not something you haven't cleaned up yet. You're creating habitat.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's just, that's so wonderful. For me, it's helped ease my guilt about not getting more done, but also just feel like, oh, no, actually, there's benefit to this.
And some of those things we've done intuitively, I know in my younger gardening years, I intuitively would chop and drop at the back of my borders. I felt like I was being lazy. And then I got Anne Lovejoy's book that said, chop and drop. And it was actually, you know, this is a
thing. It's a thing, I know. Isn't that great when you figure that out?
It is, when your natural intuition is doing things.
Yeah.
And maybe you trust that in some place in yourself, but then there's the part of your mind that's saying, ooh, I should clean that up. Oh, what's Mavis going to think when she comes over? See all my, you know, not chopped down. And, you know, sometimes we just have to let go of some of those standards, those beauty standards, and realize that this is a natural living thing.
Yeah. And you're working with it every year, and every year it's going to be slightly different.
Exactly.
And just the more that you pay attention and the more that you're just kind of engaged and watching how the plants grow and or don't grow. I mean, to me, that's where I get a lot of the insight out of like, oh, hey, you're right. It's, you know, and I feel like especially this like early spring time of year is so tricky for people who are just kind of learning how to garden or maybe aren't familiar with this region, because we can still get some pretty shady weather between now and I always say mid-April. And we were talking about this. It's like, you know, our last official frost date is mid-April. And by frost date, that means it can still hail. It can still be freezing. Bad things can still happen. And so you do want to be thoughtful about what you're putting outside.
Yeah.
And just know that, you know, it could still totally freeze or get badly
hailed on. Storm. And that you were just talking about the light hail we had the other morning thinking in your head, oh, these starts that are outside. And I often have those same feelings with Japanese maples just putting out their leaves or hostas. Thinking about hostas with
shot holes
in them.
Well, but it's hard. But like if a plant is very small and it's really just getting its first true leaves and then it gets completely pelted with hail. I mean, the damage that the hail can do can really like destroy those first leaves, and then that plant can't photosynthesize.
And then we plant again.
I know, exactly. Which is why, especially if you're planting annuals, it's good to just like plant over and over again.
Yeah.
But also think about how cold the soil is still, and that's a good thing. I mean, I know most people aren't going to want to invest in a soil thermometer, and I mean, I have one, and I still am really lazy about actually getting it out and sticking it in the ground because I tend to just go by other like senses or feelings. I just stick my hand in the soil and I'm like, yeah, it feels about right. But a lot of times, you know, you might plant something early thinking I'm totally getting a head start on things. But that plant won't really start to grow until the soil mm-hmm. warms up enough for its roots to feel comfortable about spreading.
Do you, you know, on the farm, do you use cloches to warm the soil?
We do two things. I often will use sort of black plastic tarps in mm-hmm. the throughout the winter and early spring, partly to kill back our cover crop or to take care of some weed areas, to dry out the soil a little bit. And then
so
it also
mulching.
warms it up because the black plastic kind of retains heat. And so you do get some heat retention from that. But then when we plant, and I plant very early, I will make little hoops over the rows and then use, we call it row cover fabric. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has a bunch of different names. It's kind of a white row cover. Sometimes people call it by a brand name, like
Agrabon. And when Teresa's talking
Remake.
About rows.
I mean, we're growing like 60-foot rows, 60-foot, 100-foot rows. So this is not most people's garden. But I was a lifelong gardener before I became a farmer. And so I totally understand the concept. I mean, whether you're talking about 10 feet or 100 feet, you know, if you plant two chard plants and you need to cover them, you need to cover them with something. And so a lot of times you can get at nurseries or through mail order a row cover fabric and
can be recycled.
Absolutely. If you take care of it, you can mm-hmm. use it for multiple years. It's like I always say, but you know, not many people sew anymore, but it's kind of like interfacing if you sew. Mm-hmm. It's like a very white sort of fleecy thin fabric. And it's basically just a blanket for your plants. I mean, it's light permeable, rain can go through it. And so we just have all of the early greens that we've got planted covered with row cover right now. It also helps keep some insects off them. So if you've planted out things like kale or other brassicas, I haven't seen any cabbage moths flying around yet, but they're there and they're coming. And it's basically just literally a physical barrier between the plants.
That was something with the cloching that I didn't completely understand. That was also this whole other benefit, that you were keeping the cabbage moss away. You were keeping some of the critters away.
Yeah, and you can get the row cover fabric comes in various thicknesses. So you can get a very, very light one, which essentially is just like an insect barrier. And I mean, it's kind of a mixed blessing because it's also keeping pollinators mm-hmm. off. So you need to think about, is this a plant that needs to get pollinated? But for a lot of our leafy greens, it can be just a way of protecting things from, we have terrible problems with flea beetles out of the farm too, which are like just basically little tiny beetles. And they create just like tiny holes all over your leaves. I hate them.
Which we can still eat.
You can still eat, and it's damaged, but it's, you know, but they can also really do a number on plants. I mean,
yeah,
they can
smaller plants.
They can just smother a plant.
Yeah.
And I've found, like, we've had terrible trouble growing radishes for a lot of years because as soon as they emerge, just even those first leaves, the cotyled leaves that come out, the flea beetles will just hammer them so hard that they're gone. And I keep thinking, like, is my radish seed terrible? What's going on? Why am I a terrible farmer? And then I finally sowed some and then covered it with row cover and was like, oh, hey, now I've got a radish crop. Oh, that's what it was.
Right.
So, and sometimes there's things that I feel like sometimes people put plants out or they seed things and they're like, oh, this stuff never germinated, but it's the slugs in the middle of the night. And that's another thing you've got to start watching out for.
Yeah, and this is really the time in the perennial gardens and the food gardens, or like many of us do, combine those things.
Yeah.
This is the time for slug baiting. The iron phosphate baits are wildlife safe, pet safe,
child safe.
The slugs don't actually die right there. They're eating them and then it's making them so they can't eat. So that's not really like us killing them, right, Teresa?
It is. Yeah,
yeah,
you know,
it is. But
I think in a greater Zen scheme of things, yes, you are. But it is pretty effective, and I've definitely had a lot of luck with that. I mean, it's a little spendy, but if you use it carefully, what I try to do is like maybe like every couple of weeks this time of year, put out some new, and usually just try to think about where are the slugs emerging from. Like,
exactly.
Do you have a walkway or cement or stones or someplace where they might be hiding? And sometimes they actually hide down in the crown of the plant, like with dahlias.
Yes.
This is a big tricky, because their dahlias are going to start emerging mm-hmm. in April. And I have mine really heavily mulched with straw right now. And I've got to pull that off because the slugs love to live in the straw. And then I've learned, like, immediately just start putting sluggo around the crowns of where I know the plants are. Because there was one year I'm like, my dahlias didn't make it through the winter. What the heck?
And then the slugs are just emerging over and over again. Sometimes with pots, you know, if we're putting out little 4-inch pots or little, you know, gallon pots doing our hardening off, the slugs can hide in the bottom of those pots then emerge in the evening. And you're like, where? What? How is this happening?
No, it's so disheartening.
So a keen eye. But I think you bring up a good point with the slug bait. It's not just scattering this everywhere. Uh-huh. You can pinpoint plants that you know are more susceptible and just do right around the drip line or right around the
because they will find it attractive and they will go for it. Exactly. So it's definitely something that just be thinking about those things.
And the eggs. We see the eggs. Mm-hmm. You know that.
Yeah,
that
as you're digging around, they look like little white
tapioca, tiny tapiocas.
Yeah. If you ever come across a little pocket of that in your soil, those are slug eggs.
Those are slug eggs. You could feed them to your chickens.
Get rid of them somehow. I don't know, but don't let them become slugs.
Yeah. The baiting is really important in perennial gardens also now. This is the time.
Yeah. It's kind of a lot of waiting. This time of year, you're kind of like, I think people are very impatient.
Observing.
Yeah. But it's also like totally fine if you haven't even started doing anything in your garden yet. You're okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know about you, but I have learned to be just relaxed about stuff like that and not stress out so much.
Well, exactly. And with our weather here, sometimes it's better to wait a little bit.
Yeah.
Let the soil warm up.
Yeah.
Remember where you planted things that are coming up.
That's the hard thing, too, to remember how to do. I know. Oh, my goodness. Well, speaking of remembering, I've just remembered that I need to remind you that you are listening to Coast Community Radio at KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5. And we're streaming at coastradio.org. And if you are just joining us today for In Season, today in the studio, I'm talking to gardener Jessica Schleif. And we are just talking about early spring.
What are we seeing?
And I was like earlier, I wanted to read this little quote from a book that my sister gave me. It's The Curious Gardener's Almanac by Neil Edworthy. And it's just one of those collections of quotes and kind of folk wisdom and science and a lot of different things. And it's funny, I keep it next to my bed and I read it like when I'm having insomnia, because eventually it just sort of puts me to sleep. But and this is a gentleman named Henry Van Dyke, who lived from 1852 to 1933, and his observation was, the first day of spring is one thing, and the first spring day is another.
And so true. We just had the equinox.
I know. And I think that people think, oh, it's spring. So I should do all these things now. I should be putting my tomato plants out. Already have people asking me about, like, so when is the basil going to be ready to put out? And I'm like, you know, August.
Peas.
Yeah.
Sweet peas.
Yeah. So what are some good plants to plant this time of year? What's like your go-to list of things?
So, you know, I was looking in the Maritime Northwest Garden Guide.
Which is the most fabulous garden book.
Put out by Seattle Tilth. Uh-huh. And it's just, I've been working out of this book for about 4 years, and I wish I would have discovered it so much sooner, because this is the Bible, people. This is the Bible.
And it's a tiny book, too.
It's just a sweet little month-by-month guide of things, and it's mostly focused towards food plants or edibles, some medicinal plants.
And pollinators, too.
Plants, yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. And they lay it out month by month and talk about things that you can sow outdoors and indoors. I'm just going to read off some of the outdoors throughout April, things that you could be sowing.
Uh-huh.
In the beet family, you could be sowing beets, auric, quinoa, spinach, and Swiss chard. How do you feel about some of those things right now? It seems so early.
It does seem early. For me, I do all those things as starts.
Yeah.
Even beets. And this is a weird thing. It took me a while to figure out, but I had a really hard time getting beet seed to germinate effectively in the garden
when
I direct sow it. And so I actually sow it into plug trays. You can get these trays that are like, you know, 128 cells and I like a seed in each, and I let it grow on until it's got like two or three true leaves.
You're
and then
kidding.
I transplant. It's a little bit tedious, but I'm getting the beets.
And I guess if you can do that and you are planting so much more.
I'm planting hundreds of beets.
Yes. So if we're planting our little 4-foot by 4-foot patch of beets, I think that might be.
The trick with root vegetables to transplant them is that you need to do it when the plants are very young. You don't want them to get root bound or stressed at all. And you just need to be very gentle. You need to handle them only by their leaves. Try not to squeeze the stems or squeeze the roots at all, because you don't want to crush that. But it's possible. It's absolutely possible.
I have had some luck with the beets.
I've never tried to transplant
ground.
Carrots.
Yeah, neither have I. But both those things, I look at someone like Ed Moen at the community garden, and he is growing these just incredible beets and carrots in a raised bed. And I watch him and I think, how are you doing that? And he tells me the Steve Solomon organic fertilizing mixture, which is
I
also
make that up.
In
also
this,
good, yeah.
It is also in this book. And just really careful spacing, you know, really careful planting. I often will overseed and think, oh, I'm just going to thin that.
Yeah. Well, and you have to actually thin.
Yes.
And that's the hardest thing. I think especially when we're starting things from seed, everything is so precious.
And people, I know the poppies, some of the pollinator things, some of the poppies, some of the flowers that were tossing around seeds in the garden and suddenly, or they've self-sowed because they've tossed themselves around, and suddenly you have this patch. And it is so hard to convince people that, if you go ahead and thin these, you're going to have a much stronger, bigger, healthier plant because it has the room to grow.
I think that's definitely one. I felt like it was one of the signs of maturity for me as both a gardener and a farmer when I finally just thinned my carrots. I did it and I killed a whole bunch of carrots and I was just like, I got to do it. And I just did it. It's like took a breath. I had to steel myself to do it. And now I'm like, oh yeah, forget it. Just thin them. I don't have time to wait for this.
I still do it. I still see myself doing it with volunteer flower plants though.
Yeah.
Or volunteer,
you
know, arugulas or little patches. But then you realize that the thinning is actually a tool to have a better crop of whatever it is.
Yeah, you're helping the plants that remain be healthier and have more room to grow. And they're going to be less stressed and you're going to get a better crop and you're going to be happier.
Exactly. And those little seedlings, some of them can be great salad makings. Mm-hmm. Some of them can be lovely chicken treats.
Yeah.
Or as, just thinking transcendentalist and straight to the compost.
Yep. Or I just pinch them off and drop them on the ground right there, and they just decay, and they're just part of the organic matter in the garden. So.
And I think that is a good thing to pinching off, especially with many of the vegetables, not actually pulling them because you're disturbing roots of other little guys.
Yeah.
Just doing a pinch or a cut.
Yeah.
Or a cut.
Whatever it works.
So carrot family, caraway, carrots, chervil, cilantro, dill. Yeah.
Cilantro is actually really hardy.
Yeah.
It's a very sturdy little plant. It's funny because I think we associate it with Mexican food or Asian food.
But so good in so many
things. But it's very cold tolerant. I've had cilantro over winter for a lot of years here.
Same.
And then it's a great thing to let it go to flower. Beneficial insects love cilantro flowers. So if you do have any.
And those seeds are so tasty once they've gone to seed.
Yeah. So definitely let your cilantro go completely to seed.
And sometimes this cooler part of the year, because they can bolt, it's a nice thing to be growing it during the cooler part of the year.
Absolutely.
I know I have problems with it bolting in the hotter, hotter climates.
What about lettuces and things like that?
Yeah. In the carrot family, also fennel. Lovage, parsley, and parsnips.
Yep.
All kinds of greens can be happening right now. Arugula, Asian greens, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, collards, cress, kale, radishes, turnips. What about doing mesclun mixes now?
I think you could. I think it's just, you know, in some ways, I mean, part of it's like you have to just try. You have to just try something, and in some ways be willing. This time of year, I think you have to be willing to lose some plants if you're going to experiment. But it's still early enough in the season that you could certainly try, and you're gonna learn a little bit about, so if I sow the seed and then it pours down rain for 2 weeks and then it doesn't germinate, maybe the seed got washed away or maybe it rotted, you know.
Right. Or maybe the slugs came out and got it.
But it might totally work, and that can be great.
And that is another thing. I've been really surprised seeding. The weather isn't quite warm enough. And just having that patience sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes they really are going to come up.
They really are. I find that even with things that I'm seeding inside our greenhouse and waiting sometimes, and I'm thinking, oh, that plant is just never going to germinate. And I'm ready
to... And you're ready to dig around and look and see or dump them out?
Or I'm ready to... More likely, I'm just ready to like dump that whole flat out and start again. And then I realize, oh, wait, that's a tiny little... Yep. Those are, oh, look, it's starting to germinate. And it might be like 3 weeks, a month later... And it's just taken that long for the seed to wake up and germinate. So sometimes you do have to be patient.
Yeah. Peas, too.
Oh, peas.
Snap peas, snow peas, shelling peas. Yeah. Are you doing sweet peas now?
I am doing sweet peas now. And with all those things, again, it's like I do them as transplants just because, you know, for me, I'm like, I need to make sure that they show, that they grow. And you can, again, you can do them from transplants. You just want to make sure they're not too root bound. But having said that, with peas, I have transplanted some of the worst root bound.
Same.
And I've just, you know, torn the
I've
roots up
some
a little
bit. I've from you occasionally where I'm like.
And I'm just like, oh, are these ever going to grow? But they do. They do just fine. So I think.
Loosening up the roots.
Yeah, loosening up the roots and tucking them in.
Good
and,
soil.
And I think they're fine. So if you, I mean, if you're really hankering to start things, you can always just start some stuff in containers in a sunny window or under some grow lights if you have them. And then. And then plant them out when the weather is a little bit better.
Sure, sure.
I know. It's. Yeah. I mean, it's exciting. It's fun to be outside.
It is.
Unless
it is.
It's like hailing on you. And then, and then it's time to go back inside with a cup of tea and do something else.
Also not forgetting that the home gardener, if you are planting in spot, you can think about small cloches. You know, that cover crop, I have done things with clothespins and a small piece of cover cloth. Uh-huh. Row cover cloth, made my own little bamboo poles,
absolutely.
Turned into a small cloche.
Yeah, and you can just, and a cloche is just like a fancy French word for like a covering.
Yes, a cozy.
I know.
Like that's what I think about.
A tea cozy for your
cozy.
Plants. Exactly. But those are all ways that you can kind of get your plants out early, let them start to root, and provide some protection for them. So I know, it's exciting. It's just hard not to get out there every day.
And we can get that out there every day this time of year. Take a cup of tea and sit down and maybe just look at what's happening.
Absolutely. And just pay attention. Look at the leaves, the trees, how they're leafing out, and what birds are starting to show up. I mean, it's definitely spring. Spring, it takes a while to fully arrive, but it's definitely here.
Yeah.
So be optimistic. And, you know, for all the rain that we're having right now, we're going to start complaining about it not raining enough
I remind myself of that so much as I'm looking through the weather into the future.
I know.
Like, in a minute, it's going to get warm. We're going to have one of those 80-degree days.
I know. It's coming. It's coming. So I know. Well, it's exciting to talk plants with you, Jessica. Thank
Same.
You so much
Thank
for coming
in. Thank
you
so much in. For inviting me
It's been
me today.
Really fun. And good luck in your gardens, everyone. Just hang in there. It's gonna settle down pretty soon, and we'll all get growing fast enough. Thanks for joining us for In Season, and thank you, Joanne, for engineering.